Talking with former Holland Congressman Pete Hoekstra, who has thrown his support behind another Hope College, fellow Hope College alum, in Terry Lynn Land for the U.S. Senate. Explained what led you to throw your support behind her efforts.
Well, Terry and I are good friends. She was a very active supporter of my campaigns in the last two election cycles. But more importantly, it's not about her support of me. I think she'd make a great senator. She's got a long track record of public policy involvement at the state level. She knows this state very well. I think she could make and will make an outstanding U.S. senator.
Was this a quick decision by you, or did you weigh the options of not only you being a possibility, but also some of the other possible candidates who eventually pulled their names out of consideration?
Well, though I spent a lot of time thinking about this, obviously endorsing someone for the U.S. Senate is an important decision. My name was never in that mix. Diane and I, we've run two statewide races. We're not doing that again. But again, the taking a look at Terry, and I had some other friends that were thinking about taking a look at this race. Mike Rogers, Dave Camp, Candace Miller, all of them would have been outstanding candidates. But they all decided to pass on this race. And so now that, we're down to one outstanding candidate, I think it's, from my perspective, it's important to try to get through this process, not have a primary. Winning this seat for Terry is going to be a very, very tough job. We need a united party. We need to be focused on November of 2014. And, if we do that, I think we can have a Republican senator for the first time since 2000.
Yeah, that was Spence Abraham when he was upset by Senator Stabenow. It sounds like, to a certain extent, the Republicans need to follow a page from the Democrats' playbook, not trying to follow the Democrats, but do what the Democrats have done and pretty much saying, okay, Gary Peters is our man, and we're going to discourage anybody else from running. Republicans aren't going to do that, probably, but still, rallying behind one candidate now is probably going to be very effective.
I think so. I think we may take exactly the same route as the Democrats. And I think Terry is a person that can unite our party. She's clearly demonstrated in the past when she's run statewide that she can not only get the Republican vote, but she can get the independent vote, and she can get Democratic voters. So she is a proven vote getter, and she's a proven leader in public office.
Without more or less slapping the Republican National Committee and maybe being critical of them, but do you really think that the National Party will throw their support behind Terry Lynn Land's effort that maybe wasn't there in previous campaigns by other challengers since 2000?
Well, I mean, I'm very familiar with the process that they use. They have a limited amount of money. They have they know exactly how many seats they believe that they can pick up. And, they'll put Michigan on a priority list as to how likely they think it is that Terry can win. And, they'll start going down that list, and they'll draw a line somewhere where the money runs out. And I just hope that, when they draw that line, that Michigan's above that line and that they will invest and spend significantly to help her win this race. Michigan's a very expensive state. In 2012, they didn't help me. They had other places where they thought there was a better chance of Republicans winning. But I hope in 2014 the tables are turned and they look at Michigan as a great pickup opportunity.
Because of the fact, to a certain extent, a six-term incumbent is not running for re-election in Carl Levin.
That's right. You've got an open seat. Running against an incumbent, running against Debbie Stabenow or running against Carl Levin, if he were running again, beating an incumbent, especially an incumbent, both Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin, they're talented individuals. I disagreed with them politically, but they're smart, they're good people. So it's tough to beat an incumbent. But now that when you've got an open seat, I think there's a real opportunity here for someone like Terry to win.
We're talking with Pete Hoekstra. You still doing the consulting in Washington, or what's on your agenda right now?
Well, I've got a number of things going on. I've got some exciting projects right now that I'm working on with some smaller startup companies on cybersecurity, on cleaning up phosphorus out of the water, obviously, which has a lot of people in Holland interested as they take a look at cleaning up Lake Mac. I still do the consulting and some lobbying out of Washington, and I also serve on some corporate boards and some advisory boards. So Diane and I have more than enough to keep us busy, and besides that, I also have about 20 years of deferred maintenance to do on my house. I'm hoping that later on this afternoon I can finish painting the outside of my house and only have about 4 or 5 windows left to do. And so that was one of the projects we wanted to get done this summer.
Indeed, indeed. We all have this honey-do list. We have to do this. But also, the guy's got to do it as well. The reason why I was asking what's on your agenda now is, even though you're no longer in the quote-unquote loop in Washington with all the classified stuff and the like, you still have a pulse on what is going on in foreign affairs as the former chair of the House Intelligence Committee?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been very, very interested in what's been going on with this whole NSA eavesdropping and those types of things. It was actually the first program that I was briefed on back in 2004 when I became chairman of the Intelligence Committee. At that time, there were only 4 members of the House of Representatives and 4 members of the U.S. Senate that were aware of that program. So I knew how it worked. I supported the program and those types of things. They've added a lot to it in just a few years that I've been out of Congress. But, you know, Keith Alexander, the head of NSA, Jim Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, these are friends of mine. So it's very interesting to watch them and in some cases squirm now in front of the television cameras, trying to explain to the American people exactly how these programs work, why they're valuable. And really, from a disappointing standpoint, I don't think they're doing a very good job of it. And I think the American people are losing support for these programs, and I think that's a dangerous thing. I think they've helped keep America safe. But if the intelligence folks can't defend the programs and can't explain to the American people how American civil liberties are being protected more effectively than what they have been, these programs are going to go away.
And the other reason why I was bringing this up, and I will want to chat with you from time to time as we go along, is a couple of hot spots in the Middle East. You're well aware of them. Egypt, of course, continues to be a flare-up situation. Now we got talk of maybe Syria using chemical weapons. That thought just keeps on simmering and simmering.
Oh yeah, and, you know, Libya. I met with Muammar Gaddafi 3 times, between 2005 and 2010. What's going on in Egypt? I'd met with Mubarak and many of the leaders in Egypt. One of the things that I really do have a passion for is, what's happening to the Christian community throughout Northern Africa, throughout the Middle East is absolutely outrageous. The Coptics are literally being slaughtered in Egypt. The Chaldeans are being persecuted and killed in Iraq. The Christian minority in Syria, they're actually supporting Assad. And if Assad goes down in Syria, you can expect that the Christian community will probably be totally wiped out of Syria. Probably within 24 months after the collapse of the Assad regime.
Yeah, and that's one other thing, too, is the fact, and I've talked with some religious leaders along the lines as well, is, as much as we don't want to see this, as much as we don't want to see this persecution of the Christian community, the persecution of the Jewish and the Israeli community, unfortunately, it's following a lot of what we're seeing, what has been put in the Bible. We're seeing, really, the culmination of biblical prophecy right now.
It does, but, that's not an excuse not to do anything. I think America and I think the American church has been silent in the face of this persecution of our fellow brothers and sisters in of faith in Jesus Christ, we've been silent and we've not been standing up and doing the types of things that might provide some kind of assistance to our fellow Christians. And you're absolutely right, also to the Jewish community.
And that leadership or lack of leadership is being seen domestically as well, with the agenda of those whose belief system are not the same as what is put in the Bible, and the growing efforts in that regard. The silence is hurting domestically. It's hurting foreign relations-wise as well, Pete.
Yep, no, it really is. Like you said, the whole Middle East is ablaze, and I'm actually the last couple of days I've been going back and taking a look at what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years. But actually, America needs to go back and take a look at what's happened since 2001. Not all of the Bush policies were effective. We've changed governments in Iraq, we've changed governments in Afghanistan. We've paid a major price in both of those conflicts with American blood. But we deposed leaders, but I'm not sure that fundamentally those countries are much better off today than what they were 10 or 12 years ago. We really need to be looking for, a strategy that is different than the Bush strategy, that's different than the Obama strategy, and hopefully it can be a strategy that gets bipartisan support over the long term, that will enable us to be more effective in promoting democracy, human rights, freedom, stability in the Middle East.